You're listening to Lunch with Legs on Radio Free Brooklyn. Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Lunch with Legs here on Radio Free Brooklyn. My name is Legs Malone and I will be your host for today's episode. I am so excited to bring you today's interview. This is a rebroadcast of an older interview that I did several months ago with the fantastic Miss Kristen Corvette of Sluttist.com. If you would like to hear the full unedited version of this interview, you can go ahead and check out lunchwithlegs.com and scroll on down our feed, and you will find all sorts of information on Kristen and about her amazing website that she started called Sluttist.com. Sluttist is a very cool website, and Kristen is a very cool lady. I know that slut is a huge, growing up for me, it was certainly a pejorative term, but I love how it has been reclaimed and turned into empowerment. Although there is still plenty of work to be done on that front, Kristen is definitely one of the primary ladies, dare I say witches, leading the charge on all things patriarchy and rape culture and everything that would demean an otherwise powerful word, and that word is slut. This is a fantastic episode for your inner and outer feminist, and Kristen is just such a treat. I did not know her before doing this interview. I don't usually interview people I don't know, but a dear friend of mine said, oh my God, you've got to talk to her, and I am so happy that I did. So, ladies and gentlemen, go ahead, relax yourselves, get ready for a fabulous episode of Lunch with Legs here on Radio Free Brooklyn, featuring the fantastic Kristen Corvette of Sluttist.com. Kristen Corvette of Sluttist.com, thank you so much for being here today. It is such a pleasure to meet you. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
It was such a pleasure. You're my first ever interviewee who I have just met.
It makes it more exciting that way.
It does.
More mystery.
Wrapped inside of enigma in a very beautiful body.
Oh, wow.
It's being an attractive New York female, you know. I think it's important to acknowledge these things. How are you today?
I am excellent. I am actually making plans for a Sluttist festival.
Shut up!
Yes, and it's very... No one knows... But I guess now people are going to know.
Now people will know.
Recording this. But March 29th at St. Vitus Bar Club in Brooklyn, I'm just setting up some of the performers. I'm hoping to have some visual art on the walls, some spoken words, some talks, and then some bands. And a whole sort of like an all day, meaning like 6 to midnight all day.
Totally, totally.
You know, but I'm really excited about it. And the theme is what I'm really excited about because it's sort of looking into the witch archetype and how that connects with the modern day slut discourse.
So I got a full body shiver when you said that. Holy shit.
I hate to start out with such a big, you know, topic before we get into
it. No, thank you for starting out with such a
who the hell
topic.
I am and what Sluttist is, but...
Gotta start somewhere.
It is a sex-positive feminist website, and I've had so many different contributors, and so many of them happen to be witches or spiritual women, and it just sort of came to me like the universe was telling me I had to put on this sort of witch as slut as feminist sort of parallel in the event. I don't myself identify, but I believe in many of the same things, and I've practiced, some sort of work in that way, but not fully like some of my friends who really are embodied in that way. But I just have so much respect for it, and there's just so many exciting little nooks and crannies to get into that I feel like that'll be a really fun draw. And I'm kind of sick of feminist events being all so... There's just a certain aesthetic, and I don't see a lot of, like, darker...
You mean you don't like Lilith Fair or the Indigo Girls? What the fuck?
Those things are all wonderful.
Absolutely.
And they're popular for a reason, but, like, there are no... And the funny thing is, because, you know, you would think there'd be more dark feminist sort of events because of, you know, Kali and Lilith and all these goddesses of death in the underworld, but yet... maybe it's because women have been so, you know, put upon that they don't want to even think about darkness in a way. But there is so much, you know, blood and darkness and death and horror and pain and beauty in that, that I think there needs to be more of that. And aesthetically, I just want that. So, you know, right?
It all works out.
Yeah. So that's the long-winded introduction to this event. And I haven't named it yet. You know, all these things will happen. So yeah. I hope, you know, I hope people come. But it's I have a long way to sort of shape it up. But I'm really excited about the idea.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And great job, I mean, putting it so far out there, you know, March. I mean, that's just about a little under 7 months away.
So I have time. So and totally I have time. Some ideas for some burlesque. And I think it's just going to be quite an event. It's an event that I really wished existed. So, all right, I'll just do it myself.
Absolutely. Right? And that's the way to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
Spot the need and fill it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think the darker side of femininity, you know, and when I say darker, I mean all sides of the dark, you know, like the dark of the night, the, you know, what some people might call gothic or sort of more horror-based, but also, I mean, there can only be as much light as there is dark, and I feel so, and it's an essential part of the healing process, not only of the feminine archetype, but of just feminine energies that both women and men have in their, you know, the gender-specific bodies. You know, the darkness is, there's such a stigma attached to it that, you know, people are scared of, or, you know, oh, it's bad, or it's evil, and it's not. It's part of life.
Absolutely.
I mean, so I want to say that, and also that I'm just fucking psyched. I want to go to this.
Good.
Oh my God.
I hope so.
So tell me about, and I have it on the website, but I want to hear what your description of your extraordinary website, slutist.com.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so
it's
much.
It's fucking rad.
Well, I feel like, first off, like a curator of it. It's not my site, even though I started it and it was my idea. The reason why I think it's so great is because it's grown so much and gone to different avenues and angles because of all the people that have gotten involved. I think we have around 20 different writers now.
Awesome.
They contribute when they have time and with their own lives, of course. But I think I really just like to put together really different perspectives on different kinds of feminism. But the main core is a sex-positive feminism. Owning your sexuality and fully embodying it and shame-free at all times. But we do delve into how hard that can be and all the sort of double standards and reasons why it's difficult. Yeah. So it began a little bit 2 years ago. And
it's quite young.
Yeah, it's very young. Actually, this event is in time for this two-year anniversary.
Amazing.
So I had always done music and art and culture, sort of writing and being involved myself in sort of artistic pursuits as well, but then also had the gender studies side and with undergrad and grad school, and I never really married them that much. But a couple years ago, you remember in the election season, Rush Limbaugh called Sandra Fluke a slut, and the word came back, even though it never went away. It was more in the headlines.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really got me thinking about these things, and one day it just sort of came up that this was personally my point of view, and why not sort of combine everything that I had been doing into this one, you know, singular vision for a site and a media outlet. So that's how Slutters was born, and since then it's just been, who knows where we'll go week to week. It's just, you know, different people contact me, I contact different people. One of my favorite parts of it is the Slut of the Month. And I've met so many amazing women because of it. And actually men, too. I don't really define what, you know, it has to be, but I've had everyone, you know, from sex workers to clothing designers to singers to actors to just regular people. They've all, some people contact me and they say, I want to be Slut of the Month, and I think that's awesome. And then I have to chase after, you know, some other people. And some people are afraid to be on the internet with the word slut next to them, and I have, you know, obviously, just because I'm trying to use it in an ironic way and reclaim it, repurpose it, doesn't mean it just goes away in society.
Absolutely.
Out there as a taboo. So I completely understand. It's not easy. It's not simple. And I'm not saying it is, you know. So it's sort of had its challenges, but thus far, you know, I just got my confirmation for my October Slut of the Month, which will be a surprise.
Amazing.
But I'm very excited. So, yeah, I think that's the gist of it.
Yeah, totally. Now, how would you you sort of touched on this already, but how would you define the word slut?
Well, I think it's been used to describe a woman that men are afraid of and that women are afraid of. People, that woman that threatens with their own expression of their sexuality. Mm-hmm. That's how I think, you know, it's used to police female sexuality. It's used to shut women down. It's used to damage their reputations. It's used as a reason to assault or kill or rape, you know, women as well. But I really think it comes down to this threat. Mm-hmm. It's the woman as threat, and it makes, you know, other women or men act out against mm-hmm. that woman. And oftentimes, you can't really even define why someone's called a slut. Sometimes it really has nothing to do with sexuality at all, you know. It's just like in high schools with slut shaming and sexual bullying, mm-hmm. you know. Some poor girl is singled out, and sometimes it's for no reason because maybe she wore some weird outfit or something. You know, it's nothing to do yeah. with her actual actions.
Right.
So it just seems like there's really no definition. It's just used across the board to shut women down. And Jessica Valenti wrote a great article recently about, you know, there being no definition, but obviously the results are real. So
yeah.
who needs to have a definition, really, you know?
Totally.
But that's the problem with it. It's so slippery. It's sort of like ever changing in a way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's my understanding that there's also, I mean, the movement to reclaim it, you know, much like, and I'm just flashing back to when I saw the Vagina Monologues, mm-hmm. and I saw it in a room full of like 400 people, and just 400 people chanting the word cunt was amazing. It was like, let's take it back. And I'd love to know what your experience has been, you know, really working with that term and redefining it, you know, putting some of the power back into it.
Sure. Well, I think it's a long, arduous process, and I'm not naive to think that I can just go out and throw it around and it's not going to be like hurtful or triggering for some women. And so I really realized that it's just such a delicate process. But even just by putting that word next to really smart, intelligent, aware, thoughtful, you know, activist figures in the New York community and, you know, all around the country and sometimes the world, I hope that helps a little bit. And I don't personally go around throwing it in a day-to-day basis, you know?
What up, slut?
Yeah. I mean, that's funny to a friend
right,
or whatever.
Absolutely.
I think it's more of a nuanced process than that, although I do find the word more charming more and more I use it. You know, I never like really had a personal connection with the word or necessarily a negative one, because to me, if someone called me that, I always knew, you know, luckily enough, I was raised in a way that I knew that that was just someone being threatened by right. me. So, but not everyone's so lucky. So,
absolutely.
You know,
kudos to your parents for giving you that.
I don't know how it happened. I mean, and they're not that excited about the website, I'll tell you that. My mom at one point, she's really come around, actually. She's really into it, and now she'll give me ideas for the site.
No way!
Yeah, she was a feminist, but second wave feminist, and trying to get away from that, and the idea of, like, feminist pornography, she's still like, you know? And I understand, and I really like having the, you know, contradictory discussions about different kinds of feminism, and because there's not just one way. And unfortunately, the idea that there is one way of feminism is what got that, you know, the women against feminism crap that's been going around.
Oh my God.
Because it's also misinformed. If it were informed, that's fine.
Absolutely.
If you think women should do this one thing and it's not, you know, according to what they feel they should do, if you think they should be subjugated, then you can be against feminism. That's cool. But if you think you're against feminism because you don't mind if a man catcalls you on the street, that's a personal choice. Like, some days, sure, some guy says something, I'm like, cool. Some days, I'm like, I'm going to rip your fucking face off. Oh,
yeah.
Can I?
Absolutely.
May I?
You may. All the episodes are explicit, Mark.
Oh,
so.
Excellent.
So parents, be forewarned if you're letting your kids listen to this. Very educated children, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. And especially the, you know, the term feminism. I mean, I went to 8 years of all-girls school.
So. Me too.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I went middle school and high school.
Yeah. I went, third through 10th.
Oh my God. So just about the same. Yeah. I guess mine was fifth grade through senior year.
Okay.
And that was my, that's hilarious. That was my introduction to feminism.
Me too.
And I remember having a very visceral reaction to it because, well, I can't really think exactly why because, but there was something about, because I remember, I think I was associating it with the really angry women who, looking back on it, of course they had reason to be angry.
Yeah.
All of us have a reason to be angry in the face of what happens to women solely based on our bodies.
Yes, yes.
And, but at that time, I was in a very unconscious space. I can't think of a single adolescent who is conscious at that age. But I remember really, like, pushing against it and having a conversation with a friend, and she was like, well, you're a feminist, right? And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I'm not angry.
No.
Because that's just what I associate with. And it took time for me to realize, like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was a very innocent process for me. But even then, my own questioning of it, my own negotiation with it, I definitely got some shame put my way. Like, how can you not call yourself a feminist? Mm. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know. I don't know. You know? And anyway, humans are hilarious. Is the short answer to that.
That is a kind way to put it.
Humans, yeah. But anyway, looking back on it now, and I feel like right now, and I'd love to hear your take on this, it seems like now more than ever, I mean, within the last year or two, who would be termed, you know, quote-unquote minorities, being African-Americans, being transgendered, LGBT, being women, you know, the human rights aspect of their treatment has been getting, I feel it's been getting a more visible dialogue or treatment in the media. I just feel more than ever that stuff's being pushed into the headlines.
Yes.
And it's overdue, frankly. And it's, it's being treated in so many different ways, but I feel like the pot is being stirred
in
a big way.
Well, you can tell with just what's going on a daily basis in our country, you know.
Exactly.
I guess you have to go through that to get to a hopefully better place. You can't just keep quiet and then things will get peaceful. I mean,
no, people need to be challenged.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable to be challenged.
Yes.
It's uncomfortable to think that, oh, I might be, you know, this opinion might be misinformed. I'm not as perfect as I thought I was.
And some people are really not as good at that.
Hell no. Those those fortresses of ego.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, it's tough. And I mean, men and women alike.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally dependent on the individual, like, whether they're willing to go there or not. And I think there's great rewards for people who are willing to go in and, you know, question these things and hopefully have, you know, well-informed people to talk to who are patient.
Yeah.
You know, who aren't going to shame them for asking questions.
Right.
Because that's an essential part of the growth process.
Yes.
If we're all going to get enlightened, like, it's not all, you know, candy canes and marshmallows.
Yeah, exactly. It's painful. Growth is painful, but then something good usually comes of it, or at least higher knowledge of some kind. So I definitely enjoy when people put me in my place, like intellectually or ideologically, or just open me up to something I didn't think about before.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no way to know everything. Come on. You know?
Totally. Like, we're humans. We're not gods.
Right. But a lot of people seem to act that way and are very narrow. And so, you know, and what you were saying actually about growing up and being a little turned off by feminism, I felt the same way.
Mm.
And I felt that there was an anti-sex, and there was in the 80s, and there was a huge, you know, strain of anti-sex feminism or anti-porn. And I totally understand mainstream pornography has so much misogyny in it. Yeah, of course, I understand why they were fighting for it, but it sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater or whatever. So then sex seemed to be, there was a sex negative feeling. So when I was in school, I thought, oh God, if I want to do this, that, and the other with whoever, that's not feminist, so I can't be a feminist.
Right.
And I actually started my undergrad work in studying masculinity because I was so turned off by what I had learned by proxy through being in an all-girls school. That
wow.
I really started on the masculinity side because I was really interested in studying masculinity, which was great, because it really flipped me over pretty quickly to, oh, right, here we are. Yes, this is the patriarchal structure that makes you think other women are your enemies. You know, when I was younger, I remember being like, oh, I'd just rather have male friends, things like that. And now I realize, oh, shit, you were just caught up in exactly what they want you to be caught up in, you know?
Yeah.
So realizing that so I feel a little ashamed, you know, but...
Of course.
I mean...
It's part of the process.
Yeah.
Though. I mean, it's sacred and perfect in its own way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, especially if you can, like, move through
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, some people get really hung up on the shame and the guilt aspects because something in their past, like, there's, as I would say, there's a landing pad already for that in them.
Mm.
And so when it comes in anew, it goes thunk, and it confirms or reaffirms some flawed thought they have, and it's like, oh, God, you know,
absolutely.
I'm a terrible person. I mean, I say this all the time, but... have you ever listened to Brené Brown?
Mm-mm.
She gave two amazing TED Talks about shame and guilt.
Mm.
And she talks about how shame comes from the thought, I am wrong. I am something wrong. Whereas guilt is, I did something wrong.
Hmm.
And the way those interplay and intertwine, because, you know, guilt can be forgiven if the person wants to, but shame can be a lot trickier. I mean, I feel it's still within that same forgiveness process, but it goes a lot deeper. And I think that right now is such a powerful and potent moment for people to access those energies now more than ever. Certainly in a public discourse, but also privately. And thanks to websites like yours, just raising the consciousness around it, you know, creating more platform for people to write about things that other people might not feel as comfortable.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion, that's God's work. Like, and I say this all the time. I mean, I say, like, burlesque is absolutely God's work.
Hell yeah.
Because it is showing people experientially, not flat on a screen, but three-dimensionally, like, you know, in front. If the dancer's close to you, you can smell her perfume or body odor, whatever she's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a transformative experience to see sex and sexuality treated with love,
mm-hmm.
and celebration, and but also in total control, because the dancer is in total control of her act.
Absolutely.
And that's essential. That's an essential aspect of sort of, I feel, of an experiential education, and saying, like, oh, it's okay if I have a bigger belly, or, you know, fuller hips, or if I'm shaped like, you know, a rake, you know, just like this skinny little pole, or anything in between, or I have, you know, copious amounts of cellulite, or whatever it is, it's okay. It's my body. I get to do with it what I want to, and God bless that. I mean, that's... I have always thought of burlesque as one of the most enlightened, or with the greatest potential of an enlightening aspect, because there's plenty of, you know, the quote-unquote lower energies in there as well.
Yeah.
But there's room for everybody.
That's true.
You know?
I teach a fourth wave feminism class at the New School.
Awesome.
And
I want to hear about
and
that.
And I had Chikava Honeychild from Brown Girls Burlesque do a in-class performance, and she gave a lecture on the history of women of color in burlesque. And it was hands down the best part of the entire semester. Students at the last day said, A, they had never seen a woman go down to pasties in a thong in a classroom setting, and their minds were pretty much blown by that. But just learning that there were so many political and historical and feminist aspects to burlesque, I think it blew their mind. Because they're, you know, 18-year-olds. These were freshmen. So they just, like, moved to New York City.
That is a learning experience.
Right? But I just wish I could have hired her to teach the whole class. She was so great. She's amazing.
Yeah.
So... Yes,
totally.
Amen to what you just said. Burlesque is God's work, or
totally.
Goddess's
work. Whatever. Goddess, all that is creator work.
Yes, yes.
I completely agree. That's fucking rad, by the way, that you invited that in. Tell me about the class you teach.
The class is something I just proposed to them, because there's... obviously, first, second, third wave, a lot of talk of that. And then in the recent years, there have been some, you know, rumblings of the fourth. Like, what is this fourth? And it hasn't really been defined officially, but a lot of people sort of come to the conclusion that it's how the internet has affected feminism, how it drives the new issues. So it's not necessarily that the issues have changed. In fact, the first day I do a chart with first, second, third, fourth. I leave fourth blank, and I put all the issues and how the issues were, you know, dealt with and or not dealt with, and the main figures, such, you know, like that. And the only thing that has changed is that women have the right to vote from the first wave. everything else just gets sort of tacked on and tacked on and tacked on. So we
Holy
get to four.
Shit.
And everyone's just like drawing arrows, you know, and then adding more issues, you know.
Totally. Can you, I mean, in like as easy a soundbite as you can muster, can
sure.
you summarize those different
sure.
ways for the people who don't know them?
Sure. I'd say first was mostly dealing with getting women's right to vote. So that was Sojourner Truth and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, Seneca Falls Convention. So we have, even in like late 1800s, and then we have 1920, women have the right to vote, but it's not like things all got better then. But hey, that's a step, I suppose. But it's still begging for scraps, you know.
Yeah.
Then second wave really was, I mean, it's defined more by the 60s and the 70s with Gloria Steinem and Feminine Mystique and...
The Pill.
Yeah, exactly. So many other great
Jermaine
figures.
Jermaine Greer.
Yes.
And is she the one who wrote... Wait, there's one, the female eunuch. Is that Jermaine Greer? Okay.
I think.
Maybe.
Oh, God. Now my...
To Amazon.
Yeah. You know, there's thousands of pages on the subject.
Absolutely.
So then the third was really a response to the fact that the second wave didn't at least publicly deal with a lot of issues of women of color or women of lower economic standing. You know, it was really like middle-class white ladies that was second wave.
Yeah.
And then the third also had elements of Riot Girl and intersectionalism was introduced in the third wave. And so we're still kind of dealing with all the great new discussions that came up with the third wave of feminism, but the internet really was a big new way that these issues are now discussed and disseminated and
yeah.
debated, for better or for worse. I mean, hashtag activism on Twitter, good or bad, there's, you know, things to be said for both sides, and I think all these new ways of communicating and discussing the issues are kind of their own thing. So I think the fourth wave is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it can just be defined by the internet. There's still, I think, sex-positive feminism really came into its own more
yeah.
recently.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fourth wave thing. It's still being defined. And you know, when I taught the class, I even said, hey, disclaimer, I don't really know what the fourth wave is. Let's talk about it together.
Totally.
That's pretty much a basic.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, thank you for that. It's making me think of two things. One, I grabbed my phone because I want to search her name. You'll probably know it, but there was a book that recently came out called Bad Feminist.
Yes.
And I'm forgetting the author's name, which is why I am madly Googling this.
Oh, I am too.
Roxane Gay.
Yes.
I am gagging to read that book. And I know, because she wrote one article that I recently read that just, like, blew the walls off my head. She's amazing. She's hilarious and speaks about things so frankly and directly that, you know, they hit home, just like boom, 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 like each of them hit. So there's that. I don't know if you've read her book. I haven't read it yet.
I have not read it yet.
Totally
it's
wanting
on a list.
To read it. But the second thing is I recently was reading an article. In fact, it may have been Roxane's article, come to think of it. It may not have been. But talking about how historically feminism has been has been for white women.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
it does not acknowledge women of color, trans women, you know, even gay women. You know, it's, you know, of all, and then everything else, you know, all the other Hispanic, Asian, you know, and fill in all of the other
right.
blanks. But it's been really a bastion of the white woman.
And I'd say middle class.
Yes, thank you. Thank
yeah,
you. Yes,
as
exactly.
Well.
And so, I mean, I'd love to know your thoughts on that, but also, I mean, I feel that that's also preparing all of us for a deeper push into that territory, you know, a deeper questioning of self and of, you know, all right, well, what makes a feminist then? You know, around that. And that might be an enormous question, and I...
That is a huge question. And
you can break it down.
I would say that it would be relying on my white privilege to be able to even answer it. So I will refrain from answering it for that reason alone, because I can't speak for anyone but myself.
Of course.
And on the site as well, I just, you know, there's so many issues that I can't relate to, so I have other awesomely talented women talk about it. So...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew the answers. I really don't.
No, it's cool.
I agree with you that it needs to be more open and accessible to everyone. But, like, Bell Hooks' book, Feminism is for Everybody. It's one of my favorite books on feminism, and it's, like, a tiny, small little book, but it goes through everything and sort of lays out why, you know, it is for everyone. But I don't know how we really get that out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question.
One step at a time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, being willing to have those dialogues in a public arena. I mean, there are questions that I definitely want to ask, you know, more of, I mean, of my community, of women of color, of mm-hmm. women who are not white and middle class.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say even, and again, it goes back to that, you know, in high school being like, well, am I a feminist? Like, but I'm not angry. I'm not mm-hmm. this, I'm not that. You know, I think the whole, you know, the concept of white privilege is really important for white people to wrap their heads around.
Yes.
It's essential because
yes.
I think so many white people are completely blind to it. I mean, I'm still being educated.
Well, I think
it.
You do every day because there's no way to really remove yourself from it, right?
Precisely.
I mean,
precisely.
Sometimes I'll just realize, wow, I just totally got away with that because of what I look like. And I'm like, okay, grapple with that, you know, and recognize that and do the best you can to keep realizing all these things. I mean, there's no way to be vigilant 24 hours a day to know every time you've maybe taken advantage of you have to, like, live your life and just try to, you know, help others where you can and not.
Absolutely.
And you also don't want to, like, racially profile just to be like, well, I'm going to be nice to you because you're not white. Or, you know, there's, like, some
absolutely.
Weird backlash
it's
that comes
funny.
With it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Or, like, even with the site, like, I definitely don't say, this month's slut of the month has to be, like, Native American. So I'm going to, you know, I really, like, think merit and, you know, the creativity and this and that should come first before race, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, obviously, that it doesn't happen so often, and, you know, white privilege often thwarts that and
yeah.
gets in the way of people's talents and, you know, output being recognized because they're non-white. So mm-hmm. it's like such a, you know, seesaw.
Absolutely.
Like, what's the answer? I mean, I think as long as you're trying, that's
yes,
good.
Yes, exactly. And I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
Because the only way any of us are ever going to land on our feet, you know, is going to keep questioning and to have the courage to keep questioning and just
yeah.
keep trying.
Yeah.
You know, and if we fall flat on our face, then guess what? You get to get up and, like, start over again.
Yeah.
But, I mean, especially living in New York City that is so, it's such a diverse place and we literally live on top of each other.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, on top of and all around each other. I think, you know, here more than ever, like, those things need to be, I mean, and even in, like, the cornfields of Iowa,
yeah.
like, people, you know, and, like, across the world, but
yeah.
I think here it's such a petri dish, and such a hotbed of diversity and backgrounds and opinions and issues that I think that New York City in itself is a very unique, rich place to debate these things.
Yeah.
And for everyone to get educated, because it's not always comfortable.
It's mostly uncomfortable.
It is. Thank you. Exactly. I mean, I interviewed Tangerine Jones several episodes ago. I can't remember the episode number off the top of my head. And I felt so beaten up afterwards because I realized how little I know. And I really thought I was educated around, you know, different African-American issues. And it was just driven home that I didn't know shit. And it was extremely painful.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely, like, I was licking the wound of my ego at the end of that. But at the same time, like, I was able to look past that and be like, okay, it's just my ego. It's not who I am.
Yeah.
You know, there's more to this. And
you didn't
as a result,
mean to be that way.
No, absolutely. I mean, it was my total innocence.
Yeah.
You know, there just open being like, I want to know more. And she gave me, and I put it on
I saw that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Awesome. And she gave me a whole bunch of links and stuff, and I read all of them, and I watched all the videos, and it was just like, it completely opened up my mind.
Yeah.
And it was really funny, because I posted on, I have two Facebook pages, one personal and
yeah.
one burlesque. And on my personal page, which is just people I know
yeah.
from school and stuff, I wrote on there after that interview just talking about how, like, I felt like I had just gotten a boot to the face and the gut. But at the same time, like, it forced me to look at things. And I said, you know, dearest white friends, like,
mm-hmm.
please check this out, please read these things. And I posted absolutely everything that Tangerine had given me, and only my black friends replied. And that in itself was like, and we all went to all girls school together.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
This is, anyway, it was fascinating.
Yeah, some people just don't want to engage and deal with the issues because it's not comfortable. You can go live in your, like, ignorance is bliss sort of world.
Totally.
And, but, you know, people that aren't born looking a certain way, you know, whether that be because of being differently abled or different body size or race or, you know, they don't have the luxury of going out and just ignoring it and living in their bubble world. But I can't relate to certain aspects of other people's lives either, and they can't relate to mine. You know, it's just sort of a, like, constant process that feminists and other humanists, I hope, have to be open to dealing with. And, I mean, I saw this article with Ferguson that was, like, things white people can do to support the community of Ferguson and this issue. And it was actually a really useful article. It seems kind of, like, funny, but there needs to be more like that.
It's true.
Because otherwise, people just feel terrible. And if you can't be on the street doing that, I mean, there's things you shouldn't do, like, well, let's not get into it.
We'll
just
leave that hot potato alone.
We can just leave that.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really, I wish there were more things like that when really, you know, difficult situations come up or, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that questioning aspect of it is essential. I mean, I'd love to bring it back into especially your website. I mean, your teaching. I mean, what resources can you recommend if people want to read up on, and I'll happily put these in the notes on the blog. If people want to educate themselves in the ways of the slut and in the ways of the feminist, what are some of, because you mentioned the one book, the really skinny
Feminism
one.
Is for Everybody.
Feminism
by Bell Hooks. Queen. Feminism. Official or unofficial. But let's see. God, there's so many other things that I love. I mean, I think there's a lot of sites that I just like to go to on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I think Autostraddle is great for a queer woman's perspective.
I've never heard of that.
And I really like Color Lines for a lot of racial, and they're not necessarily, well, they're feminist. Yeah. I mean, but it's more driven by racial issues, but it's feminist too, you know? And I really like reading what's up there, and that'll always challenge something that I'm thinking. And God, anything Jessica Valenti. I mentioned her again. I really like Jessica Valenti and what she does. And who else? Gosh. I think some of the greatest ways to engage in slut power is going to burlesque and, you know, going to performance art and going to the theater. And I remember when I first moved to New York, I saw World Famous Bob, and I was 18 years old. And she just blew my mind. I was like, this? Oh, my God. I didn't know that was, like, allowed. I didn't know women like her existed. She's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. Just the talent and just the power and the persona.
Yeah.
And holy shit. So I think things like that are just as radically feminist as reading a text. So
absolutely. That is feminism in action.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, things like that. Like I curate an art show. I co-curate it with a friend of mine, and I've done two of them. They're called Beaver, and we bring all different kinds of visual art, video art, and she's a dancer and a photographer, and she combines those, and she does this piece called Beaver at the end, and we had a little talk, and that was really fun. We had a whole panel of all different kinds of people and artists, and I think those events are some of the more feminist things you can, you know, get into, because it's good to have some, like, back and forth. And with an article, there's usually only, unless you check out the comments section, which is also often horrible.
Absolutely.
I often get comments that are awful on the site that I just delete because I just don't think there's a point to have nastiness. I mean, if it's going to be constructive, sure, but when are they ever constructive?
It does boil down to the intention behind the comment.
Yes.
Like, do you want to spew your hate all over?
Like, yes.
A dog, like, peeing all over a fence?
Yes.
Or is your intention to actually begin a dialogue here or to bring up a point?
And no one, that's the problem. It's not like the people who really want to engage in dialogue are the ones engaging in these sort of fights. Because if there were, there's very few of us mm-hmm. out there who mm-hmm. are interested in the 360 degrees of views, you know? I always like to say I feel like I was blessed because of growing up with an atheist father and a religious mother.
Wow. Oh, God, so you had both
and
sides.
And they were not married. They eventually did not get... I mean, they were married, but they got divorced. But because of that, I had radical... just viewpoints given to me at all times, and I had to see both sides, you know? And I think that just made me constantly just thinking of every side to the one debate.
That's so valuable.
And it's a little, you know, tiring sometimes because I'll often think one thing and think, no, but what about this? And I just, that's my inner dialogue is thinking the back and forth and the up and down of every issue. And sometimes I feel like that's a weakness because I always admired people who had one strong view and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm just, like, more wishy-washy. But, or I'm more flexible, you know, either way.
Absolutely.
You can define it either way. But
more room for negotiation.
Sure, because there's always a different way to think about something. I mean, I guess there's some things like child rape. There's no other way to think about that.
Right, correct.
So I'm not, you know, I'm not confused about those issues, in case anyone was wondering. Here it is on record.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. So I don't know what that had to do with what we were talking about.
It's all good. The beauty of conversation.
Yeah.
It meanders like a stream.
Like feminist discussion and discourse is often about, you know, disagreement and seeing different sides. And I think the problem is we get the angry, you know, archetype of the feminist is because I think obviously people are passionate, so that can come off as anger, but often people are unwilling to think about the other side or put themselves in the other position. So
absolutely. And I mean, I feel ego has a huge part to play in that. Because, I mean, I come from a more spiritual school regarding the ego. There's a amazing text called A Course in Miracles, and it says that the ego is something we create when we form the thought that we're separate from God. So it is the false idol that is talked about in the Bible, like beware false idols, because it is a false front. And people get so tied to it, and I mean, I've experienced this on multiple occasions on a, you know, myriad topics where people feel if something in conversation is brought up that challenges what they think, there's something in them that believes that what they think is actually who they are.
Yes.
And so if they're going to change their mind, that's actually experiencing a form of death for them. Because that's very much an ego thought. I mean, the ego says, like, if you think anything other than me, you're going to die. And I mean, there's a whole other, like, conversation within that. But I feel that, you know, people... It's actually a major, like, push towards liberation of the spirit to say, all right, I am not my ego. It's safe for me to question these things. And, in fact, it's going to make me stronger. Like, it's like, you know, testing a structure before mm-hmm. stepping into it. Like, you want to shake it a little bit.
Yeah.
And if it cracks or breaks, then, okay, take it down and rebuild it.
Yeah, it wasn't strong enough in the first place.
Exactly. Bring it down to the foundations, build it back up again, and it will be stronger and more functional that
right.
way. I wish more people,
right.
you know, would be willing to go there, but a lot of people are just so, and again, it's been, like, taught to them by their parents, or, you know, religious schooling, or whatever, but, like, something, like, close and emotional that happens when you're very young, where it's suddenly, like, I can't question anything. Like, I have to believe this, or if I don't believe this certain thing, I will lose the love of my father or my mother
mm-hmm.
or my church or my community. Like, it's amazing how much, like, deep threat people can feel in a very intimate personal space around questioning things.
Yeah.
I wish that there were more opportunities to discuss things that people feel really uncomfortable about, because it's within that questioning, no matter what they're talking
mm-hmm.
about, that's where the magic happens. That's where growth happens. And exactly as you said, we're talking about earlier, like, growth is painful.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I certainly had growing pains, physically speaking. I mean, I'm 5'11". I remember, like, physically hurting in sixth grade because my bones were growing, and it sucked. But, it, you know, here I am now, and I'm fine.
Yeah,
you know, and
it's
the same thing. I made it. Bones and all. But, yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary to me how some people are so terrified of questioning things when that's why we're here. You know, it's like at the end of the day, it's like, you know, people can divide everything they want by gender, by race, by class, by how much money they have in their bank account. But at the end of the day, we are all exactly the same, and people try their damnedest to say otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think it's so damaging.
Well, there's fear-based conditioning.
Thank you. Exactly. Exactly.
And not everyone has the luxury, maybe, of being brought into this form of thinking, or they are too afraid, or they don't want to because it's painful.
Yeah.
You know, any of those. But it's a great philosophy that I also agree with. Anytime you're suffering, you're probably about to have a breakthrough that's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Even
it's
if
so
it's like
to
the
see
worst
that suffering through.
Even if it's the worst thing you can imagine. I mean, and you know what? Even if I'm full of it, then doesn't that at least make the process feel better? Like, that's the thing. Even if it's totally, you know, this idea is wrong, then at least throughout your life you're feeling a little respite. So there, it's just, it's an unimpeachable idea. I agree. It's just totally, it works.
Yeah.
So.
No, absolutely. And I hope that, you know, I know the audience of my show does happen to be more primarily burlesque-oriented, although, you know, burlesque performers and fans. But, you know, I do get letters or emails, mm-hmm. ye olde e-letter, you know, from people of all genders and everything, you know, saying thanks or, hey, great episode. So it's nice to know that I'm reaching, with the episodes, a greater audience. But for those of you who are listening, please be willing to question everything you believe in, because if it's true, it'll stick.
Yeah.
And if it isn't, it'll fall away, and hopefully a deeper truth will rise up in its place.
And you might even stick to what you had in the beginning, but at least you did that full process. And it, obviously, it's not once-in-a-lifetime thing. You know, maybe periodically check in. I do. Probably too much. I mean, I think there's a way to do it a little too much that I'm like, oh, God, everything I think is wrong. So if you come and see that my site is gone and I've disappeared and moved to the woods, that's what happened. But no, I already booked the date, so I'll be here at least through March, but
good.
Then we'll see.
Yes, after that, to the hut in the woods.
My dad lives in Wyoming, in Jackson Hole, and so I'm always
Jackson
like...
Jackson Hole is so beautiful.
I mean, it's really not technically in the middle of nowhere because it's a city, you know, but when you go out into the mountains away, you know, 100 miles away in Yellowstone or something, that is like middle of nowhere, and I fantasize sometimes about just...
Absolutely.
What do ideas mean when you're there? When you're in, like, nature and there's nothing... There's no media there, you know?
Yeah.
That's when you can really
and also,
think about
I mean,
these things.
I feel like, you know, anybody who is a vocal, if not outspoken, feminist slash egalitarian human rights mm-hmm. believer, you know, who are in places like Wyoming or Montana or the Dakotas, you know, or anywhere where there is a conservative majority.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's a different kind of missionaryism.
Yes.
You know, and I support them with my full heart and as much spirit energy that I can send them, because that's, you know, that's sending a cure into a thick of a disease. Not that conservatism is necessarily a disease, but I feel like there are some thoughts in there that are anti-life.
And you mean closed-mindedness, too.
Closed-mindedness, exactly. Thank you. Which is, you know, again, the fortress of ego.
Yeah.
You know, people hiding behind that, terrified of asking a question or being, like, deeply unwilling to ask a question for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, those catalysts, the pot stirrers who go out there and say, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? You know? And I pray that they all remain safe, because I'm even, like, you know, gay violence out there. You're like,
oh, my
like,
God.
The homophobic violence is horrifying.
Yes. I mean, it's easy for me to live in Brooklyn and write about, you know, sex positive feminism and reproductive rights when so many people I'm surrounded with agree.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously in the internet it can reach many people, but it's so radical when people work in other areas where they are not in the majority, and I have so much respect for them. And I think I saw some biker feminists in Wyoming that were more in like rural Wyoming. I saw like a sticker somewhere that was like biker feminist or something, and I thought, oh my God, that is like
that's amazing.
So beyond badass. I can't even. And we all do our part, obviously. So
absolutely, absolutely. Have you ever heard of the Sex Workers Art Show?
No.
It was a touring show that went around for a few, if not several years, a while ago. And I'm oh God, I'm blanking on the woman's name. I'm gonna look it up while we're talking on my phone. And world famous Bob toured with them, as did Dirty Martini. Joe Boobs did a tour, but they toured all over the U.S. There was also, I know at least one of the tours, there was a dom and her sub, her slave, and like went on stage and like forced the sub to do stuff so that people could see what it's like.
Yeah.
And they got banned from places.
I'm sure.
They did a show down at like George Mason University or somewhere down in Virginia. Maybe it was UVA. And Fox News, Bill O'Reilly did a huge segment on them.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing.
When was this? A couple years ago?
Or? Here we go. I'm Googling it right now. I see one for 2000. Annie Oakley is the one who did it. I mean, I believe that's her stage name.
Mm-hmm.
William and Mary. I think that's what it was. I think the last one was in 2009.
Oh, okay.
But it was an extraordinary event. In fact, oh, look, I'm on there, and there's Bob.
Awesome.
If anybody wants to look at this, it's Sex Worker artshow.com. The implosion of the service economy is what it says. But it is, because actually sex work is also something that I'm really fascinated by and interested in. I do want to interview more sex workers because they're, talk about a stigma.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like going back to the witches. Like,
absolutely.
That is some original sex magic.
Yep.
And absolutely, there's some dark stuff in there, you know, like lower energies, but there's also profound healing that happens there. Profound healing. And unfortunately, yeah, there is violence and there is, you know, that stuff that comes along with, because people want to disenfranchise them.
Absolutely.
I'll show this to you later. But anyway, I mean, I would love to come back to the concept of the witch.
Yes.
Because that is an archetype that has been so demonized and still demonized, when in reality they were healers. You know, and I'm sure there were some, you know, ones who worked with dark magic, which
right.
is, or black magic, rather, which is awful. I mean, it has its place.
Sure.
I want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's room for everybody and there's room for everything. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how did you find out about witches and all the different energies and those archetypes?
I was really inspired by it. I've always been interested in that, the sort of dark side and the actual histories of the witch trials. But it actually connected up recently when I interviewed Pam Grossman.
Hmm.
I don't know her. Yeah, she's very famous speaker on the subject, and she gives presentations. She did one, The Witch in Art, and she does all kinds of different things on the witch in popular culture and the archetype. And I interviewed her about connecting that with the slut discourse and feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And she had so many interesting things to say about it. I mean, she's the expert, so I wouldn't even deign to speak on the connection, but I think anyone who knows a little bit about each would totally get it, you know? And actually, all the really witchy ladies I know in my life are all feminists. It's just, there's a, you know, there's the female energy there that's undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm sure there's books, but I haven't seen an explicit book about those two, connecting them together, slut discourse and the witch. So maybe I'll take on the slut discourse and I need to connect up with these other experts on witches and we need to get together, because I think that would be a really interesting, I mean.
That's a book in itself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And there's just sort of a long historical connection about people who fear powerful women and shutting them down.
Yep.
So that's what happens every day now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not as, you know, it doesn't always lead to violence now and murder, but it often still does. Too
Absolutely.
Often. Way too often.
I agree.
You know? So even from the littlest bit of slut-shaming, you know, for a young girl to the gang rapes and murder of women, like the Isla Vista or whatever,
yeah.
shooting. you know, it's undeniable that this is a trend that has not gone away.
Yeah.
So women are still being burned at the stake.
Yeah, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
If not stoned to death,
yes.
Which they are.
Yes, exactly. So there's just too much of a continuity to be denied, and I would love to read more on it or get into it with some other women about this. I think that would be a great...
I think it's essential. I mean, I feel, again, from a more spiritual perspective, I feel... I mean, I'm a firm believer in reincarnation, karma, you name it. And I feel in a lot of ways, there are a lot of souls who have chosen to be here and now. I mean, like, we're all here for a reason. Whatever that reason is up to each of us to discover. But just the time in our history, in our world, and with all of the horrible things that have been perpetuated, not just to women, but all human beings throughout the ages, I feel especially the witches are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think we ever left.
Yeah.
Because I am definitely a witch. I know that. Not that I would necessarily identify with that per se, but
mm-hmm.
It's like I vibe with that.
Yeah.
Totally. I think all burlesquers have.
Oh, yeah.
The element of like sexy witch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like now is the time to reopen that dialogue.
Yeah.
And reclaim it. It's like being a witch is amazing. You know, it's like there's the tarot deck, there's the magician. A witch is a female.
I know.
Magician.
I know.
It's like, and so like where, like, ugh, it's just, it's crazy and it's sick and it's sad, you know, what people believe so strongly, and especially with the more unquestioning and rigid Christian right, or people who are like the fundamentalists who are so convinced that they are right.
Yes.
And they don't question anything. They don't enter into discourse about anything. And I think that's actually more toxic than, you know, that fixed mind frame. And again, we've already touched on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Because they are completely unwilling to grow.
Yeah.
You know, the opposite of faith is certainty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And I want to thank you for, you know, bringing this to the forefront. And I hope that, you know, you do get surrounded by really positive energy and protective energy as well, so that your message can get out there. I mean, the platform that you're bringing up is more widely disseminated, so people can begin to question, even if it's in the privacy of their own bedrooms
sure.
or on their smartphones.
There's many ways to do it. It doesn't have to always be so in your face.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. I am mm-hmm. always thinking that's the most fun. But, you know, I feel lucky to have met all these really powerful, smart, witchy women. And as I said, being a curator type, I feel like, ah, yes, okay. Like, all these things, they're all connecting up. So
mm-hmm.
I'm glad to be going with the tide. I'm just
yeah.
letting it take me, you know? I was
totally seeing you at the helm of a ship.
Oh!
Like, you know, the ship going off and you
Excellent.
Just being the captain of it. I love it. We are... It's amazing. Can you believe we've almost been talking for an hour?
Well, so many good things to say.
I know. It's endless plethora. How can people find you if they want to read and gather up all the information that you're putting out into the world?
That would be www.slutist.com,
mm-hmm.
just in case, because there's a few different ways you can put it on the internet and pornography will come up. That's cool. But that's not my site. And I am on Twitter personally as ShadowTimeNYC.
Awesome.
I used to only write about dark art in New York. That was my old hat. So I've, you know, put my energies elsewhere, but that's still where my love lies. So it kind of all works.
Yeah.
Kind of all works together.
It all ties together.
Yep.
And I guess for parting words, is there anything you'd like to offer to our listeners? Any words of wisdom? I know I'm sort of launching this on you with zero preparation, but just to leave the last note of this episode with you.
Gosh, I would say instead of speaking more, listen more, read more. I try to do that.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen, for being on today's episode. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much. This was great.
I can't wait to have you back.
Oh, good. Me too.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Kristen Corvett. If you would like to learn more about Kristen and check up on some of her amazing work and the community she is cultivating online, please go directly to slutist.com, slutist.com. A huge thanks to all of you for tuning in today. Extra special thanks to Rob and Tom at Radio Free Brooklyn for including this show in the fabulous Radio Free Brooklyn roster. Our most excellent executive producer is Mr. David Lawrence Bird, and I have been your host, Legs Malone. Please go ahead and check out all past episodes of our podcast at lunchwithlegs.com, and also if you'd like to learn a little bit more about us. And please, if you have an extra dollar or five or even 10 to spare, please consider going to Radio Free Brooklyn's website and clicking on the donate button. This is completely volunteer and community operated and supported, and every dollar helps bring you some very cool programming, just like this show. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys, and I look forward to bringing you a brand new episode in a couple weeks' time. My name is Legs Malone. You have been listening to Lunch with Legs here on Radio Free Brooklyn.